First Canto, chapter 17, text 24 to 27. We'll read the English together collectively, all the three verses, and then start from there. Verse 24, in the age of Satya, truthfulness, your four legs... Are we all on the same page? Yeah? In the age of Satya, truthfulness, your four legs were established by the four... Let's all read it together. In the age of Satya, truthfulness, your four legs were established by the four principles of austerity, cleanliness, mercy, and truthfulness. But it appears that three of your legs are broken due to the rampant irreligion. Text 25. You are now standing on one leg only, which is... Everyone can read together? Standing on one leg only, which is your truthfulness, and you are somehow or another hobbling along. But quarrel personified, Kali, flourishing by deceit, is also trying to destroy that leg. And text 26. Now... When he was present as an incarnation, all good was performed because of his auspicious footprints. And the last text. Now she, the chaste one, being unfortunately forsaken by the personality of Godhead, laments her future with tears in her eyes. Om Jnana Timurandasya Jnanjana Shalakaya Chaksur Unmanitamina Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pangumlam Jayate Girim Yakripa Tamaham Bande Sri Gurum Dinatarina Jayasi Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadarha Shivasri Gaura Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So this series of verses here. We're going to focus on verse 24 today. The Sanskrit words in this verse, they give light as to what the topic's going to be in this most glorious purport of Srila Prabhupada's. Tapa, austerity. Socham, cleanliness. Daya, mercy. Satyam, truthfulness. Adharma, irreligion, bhagna, broken, smaya, pride, and madai, intoxication. So we can see by the combination of these words, and we can anticipate that Srila Prabhupada is going to have at it, as he does in this particular purport. Srila Prabhupada has indicated his own pleasure in reading his books a couple of different times. Once he was found reading in his room, and he said, yes, I like to see what Krishna has written. And another time he chuckled, he said, I really let them have it. So this particular purport, I feel, it's very direct, and it's to the point about the futility of material life. It gives a very... this purport is a very clear contrast between the good and the bad, between austerity, cleanliness, mercy, and truthfulness versus pride, attachment to women, and intoxication. Now, I have to say, while I was reading this verse yesterday on my break at work, I actually became very excited. I mean, this is just such a wonderful... Oh, really? I thought I'd be real cutting edge and bring my Kindle with my Bhagavatam, and a little screen just came up and said, your battery is dying. So who's got a book? Back to reality. Your battery is dying. Such is material life. Our battery is dying. Okay. So I became very excited reading this, and I was just lamenting the fact that I was sitting in the break room surrounded by all less than stellar personalities that I could share this with. What I felt after reading this was that this explains why Srila Prabhupada came to save us. This, yeah? Oh, absolutely not. We'll cover that in a different subject. So, that's not my business there to spread Krishna consciousness. I mean, all of our business is to spread Krishna consciousness, but in that particular scenario, that's... In this purport, right off, the very first sentence I think is wonderful. The deluding energy, our material nature, can act upon the living beings proportionally in terms of the living beings falling prey to the deluding attraction of Maya. Now, I would like to ask all of you, looking at that verse, please tell me, where is the hope? There's hope in that verse. Where is that hope? Amrita Kale? Very good. That we are impacted by the material nature. And it acts upon us. But it acts upon us proportionately in terms to our falling prey to it. In other words, as much as we are willing to embrace the principles of Maya, we'll be impacted that way. Now, there are two types of potencies that Maya has. Prashetpatmika, which is the covering potency, and the Avarantamika. I knew I was going to botch both of those pronunciations. The covering potency. So the throwing potency and the covering potency. These are the two energies by which Maya engages her control over the living entity. Throwing the illusion that captures them by the enticement of A, B, or C, and then covering them with that to where their intelligence, their common sense, their spiritual insight becomes finished. So in this way, Maya has these two means by which she keeps us in control proportionately to our falling prey to that attraction. So if we have the ability by which we can overcome that, we can relieve ourselves from that influence. So there's the hope right in the first sentence of this purport. Now, Prabhupada uses an example in the next sentence here, which is a very common example that he uses about the moths. For me in particular, this has a very great impact because our laundry facilities at my house is on a porch. And it's got outdoor lights on the porch. It's a screen porch. And next to the washer and the dryer, I've attached to the wall a shelf. Now, when I originally attached this shelf, you know, for putting like the soaps and the this is and that, I didn't pay much attention to the fact that there's a light fixture just above it on the wall. No big deal. It'll give a little bit of light. What has happened is that every week for the last 15 years, I have to clean dead moss off that shelf because it's right underneath the light. And the moss come to the light. They just cannot help themselves. They come in there and they completely are attracted by this light. And they get close to it and they die. Now, you would think as they're approaching the light, they would say, oh, wait, there's a whole bunch of dead moss down there. Well, maybe this isn't a good idea. Wow, not just a whole bunch, piles of them. Maybe we should go somewhere else. You would think, right? That would be the intelligence of the living entity. But it doesn't work like that. That's the covering potency. Maya has enticed them with this light, so they become attracted. This is the throwing potency. And now they become covered. They don't see anything except this light. So what do we see? What are we seeking in life? This is what we have to ask ourselves. Prabhupada explains in the next sentence what we are seeking. The fire of delusion. I thought this was so great. The fire of delusion. Because by this attraction, these moths are seeking something bright, something warm, whatever it is. I'm not, at least I don't remember my moth mentality. But somehow or another, they just keep going. And then they die. So it's the delusion that there's something there that's going to benefit me. We all know when we look at the fire that three things are going to take place. A, we're going to get burnt. B, it's going to hurt. And C, it's not going to be what we thought it was going to be. When you sit around a campfire, it's very enticing, the color of the flames and the way the flames dance and the way it consumes the fuel, the logs or whatever, and it's just, wow, it's really amazing. You get too close, you're going to get burnt, it's going to hurt, and it's not going to be what you thought it was going to be. So these are the three things that the scenario that Prabhupada paints here with the moss explained to us. Captivate, I love this sentence Prabhupada uses here. And throughout the course of the day, as you get a few minutes, you should sit down and read this purport end to end. It's amazing. So the Prabhupada uses the word here, captivating the conditioned souls who were prey to the fire of delusion. It's such a complete explanation of our sojourn in this world. Captivating the conditioned souls who are prey to the fire of delusion. Now, another question. Who sees the hope in that sentence? Come on. This is a classroom. Go ahead. Ah, thank you. Yes. Captivating the conditioned souls who are prey to the fire of delusion. But if you're not a conditioned soul, then you're not prey to the fire of delusion. This means that we have to give up our conditioning, that we have to somehow or another get out of that situation which forces us to look out for the fire, to attract ourselves to that light. So give up the conditioning means that we have to act differently. Act differently than we are accustomed to, than we are, as the word says, conditioned to, than everybody else around us does, than we've been told to by our family, friends, society, generations. We have to act differently than that. So the Vedas are the means by which we can act differently. The Vedas warn us, don't go to the darkness of ignorance, go to the progressive path of light. Very, very wonderful explanation. Don't go to the darkness of ignorance. When a child is born, we all are very, very happy to, you know, goo goo gaga and all, such a cute little baby and all these stuff. And we really get that opportunity here in Alachua. I mean, I have been here 15 years, and in the last 5 years, I have seen more babies born than in the last millennium of this creation. It's just incredible how many kids are running around out there at Alachua. And they're all the cutest kid in the world. Oh, this baby's the cutest kid in the world. But in reality, and I mean no offense against the mothers or the fathers, Jagannath Puri, but the kids are in ignorance. They don't know anything. They have no knowledge. And this is the condition of the lingam entity as it enters into a new body. They have no knowledge. So that ignorance gives them great suffering. You see it. The kid gets colicky, or the kid falls here, or the kid tries to, you know, whatever it is that babies do, and all they end up doing is crying. Because they're just learning how to adapt to things. So, Vedas give us that knowledge of how to adapt in this world. How not to stumble around in the darkness, bumping our toe, and yelling. That's what happens. You get up in the middle of the night. I used to experience this a lot when I traveled for Sacred Threads. I'd be in a different hotel room each week. Sometimes I wake up in the middle of the night, let me see, is the bathroom over here? Is the bathroom over there? What city is this? Which way is the door? You know, so you get up to use the facilities and you bump into some dresser that wasn't in that place last week when you were in the other hotel. And you scream out. So this is the darkness of ignorance. We don't know our way around. So not only do the Vedas tell us this, but Prabhupada goes on to say that the Lord also warns us. This is a great sentence. The Lord himself warns us that the deluding power of material energy is too powerful to overcome. The deluding power of the material energy is too powerful to overcome. Who's heard me say that before? I always tell my kids, you can't, between you and the material energy, you're always going to lose. You have to insert Krishna, who is the dam to stop the material energy from coming forward. But what does Krishna say? One who completely surrendered to me can easily cross beyond it. Who knows that verse in Bhagavad Gita? Who's our pundits in the room? There you go. Give it. Easily cross beyond it. Anybody know the Sanskrit? Everybody. There we go. Daivyesha Gunamayi. One who surrenders to me can easily cross beyond it. Easily cross beyond it. Who's been to the temple Sunday? Anybody go to the temple Sunday? Everybody went to the temple Sunday. You drive down the road, you get down in the air, and there's this big sign. Detour. Wait a minute. I didn't expect this. Nope, can't go this way. Now, let's suppose, I'm going to go this way. I know this is the way to the temple. And you go down that road, and what happens? You get down there, and you get nowhere. You can't go. You're blocked. It's not accessible. So this is material life. We think that going down this path is going to give me happiness. That going down this path, I'm going to be satisfied. But there's detours. Birth, death, old age, disease, ignorance, all of these things. And we go, I know it's down the road. I've been there a million times. I'll do it again. And we get to the end of the road on 235, and you get to that train track crossing, and there's big signs there, and the road's all torn up, and I've got to turn around and go back. Had we just paid attention to the detour sign, could have gone around and, boom, avoided that difficulty. So the Vedas are that detour sign of material life. They're there to help us. Now, the Lord says that this Maya is too strong. You cannot overcome it. It's too powerful. It's too prominent. It is very pervasive. But when you surrender to Him, it's very easy. What's the classic example Prabhupada always uses about being able to overcome material energy once you surrender? Who knows? Yes. The hoof print of a cow. Of a calf. Not even a cow, a calf. Now, you may have seen a couple of the cows we have on an Alachua. Big things. Huge. Okay, so maybe they got a big footprint. Okay. You can still cross over it. But a calf, little baby calf, so cute, a little footprint, but that big. Put some water in there. How difficult is it to step over that? Boom. Done. So, very easy to cross beyond that once you take shelter of the Lord. Now, but is it actually that easy? Surrender unto the lotus feet of the Lord is also not very easy. Surrender to the lotus feet of the Lord is also not very easy. Now, as a father, I have taught three children how to ride a bicycle. And you always get, no, I can't do it, don't let go, no. And then, yes, you can do it, just go ahead. And then finally it's like, oh, I can do this. And you feel, as you're riding on the bicycle, you feel the air flowing through your hair and brushing your face, and it just feels so good and so invigorating. And you develop a taste for that freedom of riding that bicycle. And nothing holding you back and going straight ahead and feeling that breeze. And you appreciate that. And then you have the conviction, yes, I can do it. And it becomes very, very satisfying. You can go great distances. But in the beginning, it wasn't so easy. So what did it take? It took that taste of what can happen. Now, Krishna says it's not easy, but there are four principles which will make it easy. Tapa, Socham, Daya, and Satyam. So these four things, Tapa, Socham, Dayam, and Satyam. Now, who has these four principles? This is a great thing. These four principles, right, of advanced civilization. Now, here's an interesting concept in modern society. What is the indication of advanced civilization? Well, I've got my 4G. I've got my Kindle, which hasn't failed me yet. The battery's not that low, obviously. I've got my, text messaging. Wait a minute, who's this from? I don't know this person. I've got my Facebook connection. I've got my, the cloud? My wife was trying to grab my, I love my wife dearly. She can't grasp technology. So what's the cloud? So it's like everything just kind of hangs out there, like a cloud. Well, how do you get to it? Anyway, so you have all these advancements, right? And therefore, we're an advanced civilization, correct? Not according to Srimad Bhagavatam. Advanced civilization does not mean you've got great technology, you've got tons of money, you've got a home in Switzerland, you've got a home in the Bahamas, you've got a home here in Alachua, you've got one in L.A., maybe one in, where's that place in Colorado, Telluride, that they ski or whatever? Aspen, thank you. So that's not actually what's considered advanced civilization. Advanced civilization is a civilization that is based on, incorporates and lives by these four principles: truthfulness, cleanliness, mercy, and austerity. If you have these four principles guiding your activities as a civilization, then you can be thought to be advanced. Now, in Satya Yuga, this was everybody. Everybody lived like this. Everybody had this focus in their life. And this guided what they did. It wasn't just a handful of people here on the corner of 14th and 3rd, you know. It was actually the entire civilization. And what was the result of that? Prabhupada says right here, the result was... by cultural standing, in other words, what is the standing of that culture? What is the designation of that culture? Truthfulness, cleanliness, austerity, and mercy. By that standing, the human beings were not at all subjected to the deluding energy. They weren't under the influence of Maya. Maya had no ability for covering and throwing, or throwing and covering. Maya did not have, because they had these four principles that kept her out of it. So as a result, strong character gave them the ability to be free from illusion. Now, this is an important point because especially, you know, now with this whole election year, and all, it's like every year seems like it's an election year. You know, they finish one and they start ramping up for the next one. But everybody talks about the character of this candidate, the character of this party, the character of this individual. You want to talk about character? Let's talk about these four principles. Let's see who's got character. This is the real idea of character. This is the real idea of advanced society. This is the real example of someone who has control of their senses. Such persons of strong character were competent enough to get away from the clutches of Maya. They knew to say, nope, I know that fire is going to burn me. Nope, I know that detour sign is there for a reason. And they avoided these things. And therefore, that avoidance also strengthened their character. So the application of the principles gave them strong character, and the observance of those principles strengthened that character that they got. So, as Prabhupada said, it became the means and the ends. How do you develop strong character? By doing these four things. And what happens when you do these four things with that character? As a result of that, you're able to continue in that way, become a good example. So, then Prabhupada, I love this next sentence. But gradually, as the basic principles of Brahminical culture became curtailed. Now, any time a paragraph starts with the words but, you know you're in trouble. These three letters of the alphabet never bring any good. B-U-T. But, well, I was going to do it, but I really will, but, oh, I'd like to, but things were very good, but we had a good election, but the crops were good last year, but whenever you hear that, you know something not very good is going to come about. So, here we go. Gradually, the Brahminical culture becomes curtailed. And how does it become curtailed? This is the important point. How does Brahminical culture become curtailed? It becomes curtailed by three things. The development of pride, the attachment to women, and the intoxication. These three things are the undoing of society. Now, when they're present, when these three things are present, what happens? I love the way Prabhupada words this. He says, the path of transcendental bliss goes away. No. The path of transcendental bliss goes far away. No. The path of transcendental bliss goes far, far away. How many of you happened to be outside last night and saw the moon and Venus and Jupiter all together? It's amazing. They're closer than the path of transcendental bliss when these three principles of Maya are present. You've got a better chance of getting there than you do of attaining transcendental bliss. Prabhupada specifically does. He doesn't say away. He doesn't say far. Far, far away. So how do we avoid this? Let's take a look at the three principles. Yeah, that's what I'd like to do. So, pride. Humility is the most important and the most valued possession of a saintly person. If a first person speaks very lofty words, has a great understanding of Shastra, but has no humility, who wants to hear from that person? Who wants to serve that person? If a person is arrogant and full of themselves, if a person is filled with satisfaction with their own efforts, and so on and so on and so on, they're not appealing. That association is not enjoyable. What's that they say? Well, you don't have to worry about him. He doesn't talk about anything except himself. He's not going to criticize other people. He doesn't talk about anything except himself. So a person that has that state of mind, that pride, is going to be their own undoing. And in their activities, they are going to cause ruination and distress for others. Who can tell me the classic example from Srimad Bhagavatam of Brahminical culture being diminished by pride? Yes, Sringi. Sringi was the son of a very qualified Brahmana. This Brahmana was engaged in deep meditation. Pariksit Maharaj came after such great travels, he just wanted some water. Excuse me, I'm the king, could I get a cup of water, please? And the Brahmana was engaged in this meditation. One of the principles of that type of meditation is you're not cognizant of the outside. You don't know what's going on around you. So it was ignored. So Pariksit Maharaj, and this is, of course, all the plan of the Lord to bring about Kali Yuga. Pariksit Maharaj also uncharacteristically, oh, you're so full of yourself? Okay, well, here, take this garland, a dead snake. Puts it around him. So Sringi, unlike his father, who when he was awoken by the feeling of this garland being placed on him, right, just threw it to the side, nothing of it, right? His humility was intact. But his son, Sringi, became outraged. Oh, you think you're this and that? Curse you. You treat the Brahmins this way? I'll show you what the Brahmins can do. And he puts the curse on him. So Sringi is used in the Bhagavatam as the classic example of the downfall of Brahminical culture due to his pride. So what to speak of the Brahmins, Prabhupada says in the purport here, that even a pauper is proud of his penny. Yeah. Even a pauper is proud of his penny. You see it. Anybody that has a little bit of wealth, one of the most common things this is just an observation, this is not anything more than that, you do see pretty commonly the people that may not have the means definitely have really good rims on their cars. And people will spend hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of dollars for their car rims to do all kinds of fancy things. Is that really where we need to be putting our money? It's a statistical fact that some of the most common participants in lottery expenses are the people that can least afford it. But they're just hoping that they'll win. Just hoping, because then my life will change. So these type of scenarios, you know, they're very proud of whatever they acquire. I lived in New York City for a long time, and there's a very large population of homeless people there, and you see them with their shopping carts. I'm sure they probably have them here. I just haven't seen as many. And this shopping cart is filled with every kind of conceivable item that anybody that looks at it would think, oh, I'm not touching that. But these people are so proud of what's in there. They're pushing the shopping cart all over the streets of Manhattan. They guard it at night. They're so proud of it, and it's nothing. But it's their possession. They're very proud of it. So this pride is the downfall. Let's look at the next point. Attachment to women. Due respect to our Matajis here. You have progressed nicely as a society. This does not mean just attachment to women. So no men should develop pride in this. In our modern age, the equality of the sexes becomes so much so that the women can be equally degraded. The attachment to women is actually a very polite speech for attachment to the nasty sex desire. Men, women, doesn't matter. You're all very fortunate. The environment you're surrounded in during the day is nice personalities like yourselves, going out to the university and preaching nicely, coming back and more nice personalities. I work in a less than stellar environment. The people I work with are absorbed. And I use the word in its most pure sense, absorbed in sex. Men to women, women to women. I can't even count the number of active lesbians in the workplace I live in. Men to men, active gay gentlemen. And so many other combinations. And they brag and talk and describe and discuss this stuff all day, nausea infinitum. And, you know, what was it I told my associate Tom yesterday? I said, you know, sometimes after spending a shift working with you, I really feel like I have to go home and take a bath. And he laughed and thought it was quite amusing and proceeded to share more things, which made me want to bathe even quicker. So that type of association is indicative of the mentality of Kali Yuga. It's not that this is saying that, oh, attachment to women, therefore women are bad. It's talking about the attachment to this body, whether we're a woman attached to men, whether we're a man attached to woman, whether a woman attached to woman, man attached to man, whatever the situation is. It's talking about this nasty sex desire, which binds us here in this world. It's the principle which makes us a victim. We become victimized by this enticement. Prabhupada says, how does he say here? The women are always dressed in an overly attractive fashion to victimize the minds of the men. And the men are dressed in it, you know, either way. You look at the fashion pages of any magazine today, and it's terrifying. The things that are passed off as fashionably acceptable are quite frightful, actually. You know? So the thing is that it's a victimization process. Everyone becomes victimized by this exploitation. Just to kind of quote in not such stellar source, but what is that line from the Eagles Hotel, California? We are all victims of our own desire. We're all victims of our own desires. And this is indicative of this particular bad quality, attachment to the opposite sex.
We're all prisoners here by our own device.
Same principle. All right, and the third thing that Prabhupada mentions.
What's that?
See, it wasn't in the Bhagavatam, so I didn't have to quote it exactly. I think I have more leeway with, what's his name? I don't know his name anyway, than I do with Srila Prabhupada's words. But anyway, so third principle, intoxication. I found it interesting, the Sanskrit word for intoxication here, madai. If you take the first portion of that, M-A-D, mad. When you become intoxicated, you're in a state of madness, crazy, out of one's mind. Oh, he was just drunk out of his mind. You know, oh, man, I was so stoned. I was completely out of my brain. You know, completely different experience. In other words, not present in my good consciousness. Now, intoxication is nothing new. Prabhupada describes this material world as intoxication on top of intoxication. We're intoxicated by the material energy. We're intoxicated by the idea of enjoying in this world. We're intoxicated by all the aspects available to us of sense gratification. Now add, as Prabhupada says here, here we go. Add to that drinking, smoking, drinking tea, and chewing tobacco, etc. Etc. means there's a whole lot more, but we're not listing them here. So these principles, add to that, and you become completely mad. The common sense is removed. Loss of common sense, loss of decency, loss of memory, loss of self-pride, loss of self-restraint. These are all qualities that come with intoxication. You see it. You know, someone will wake up then. I mean, the classic example of somebody who's on a binge, they wake up the next day, they have no idea where they're at. Sometimes they have no idea who this is next to them. Sometimes they have no idea what they've done. They can't remember. They've got to try and figure out who they were with last night. Some friends, they can describe what happened. Oh, trust me, you don't want to know what you did. You know, all of these things come about as a result of intoxication. One acts in such a way that one has no intelligence. The intelligence becomes completely ruined. So these are the three things. And what does Prabhupada say about these three things? It's great, it's great. All these habits, here again, of so-called advanced civilization, right? All of these habits are the root cause of irreligiosity. Who does any gardening? Ah, you've all done a little bit of gardening, right? When you're weeding your garden, the most important thing to do is get those weeds out. This is plant that grows out my house. I guess it grows everywhere. The root is this little tuber-looking thing, kind of white. Looks like a tiny little white carrot. And it grows these shoots. I mean, I've seen them this long. And they just cover the whole yard. And they come up with these little green thingies that are just nothing but a nuisance. And when you go to clear out your garden, I just spent this last weekend setting up my gardens for Tulsi and Giri Raj and all for the summer. You got to get all those out. If you just pluck off the top of it and maybe just, you know, without that much of the runner, that root's going to come back. You have to dig out the root because the root is where it all starts. So Prabhupada says this, these three things, these are the root cause of irreligion. And with them present, it is not possible. Prabhupada says with these three present, it is not possible to check corruption, bribery, and nepotism. Here again, election year, what are they talking about? Oh, we want a new government that won't be corrupt. We want a new government that won't be susceptible to bribery. You know, this is a big thing in Russia, also in India, but it's just an accepted lifestyle there. But it's a big thing right now in Russia. They want a new government because they feel the old government's all bribed and this, that, and the other. But in reality, everyone is bribed. What do they call it now? The PAC fund? Is that the word for it? Anybody up with? They have these super PACs. Super PACs. That's what they are. They decided that the businesses could not donate to a particular campaign because obviously then that campaign's got to, you know, take care of the business that gave the donation. So they have a third party now. They're called a super PAC. And you can donate to that. And the super PACs have no connection with the candidate. I mean, no, who would ever think that? They just kind of fund stuff on behalf of the candidate, but the candidate has nothing to do with them. That's the concept. So it's nothing more than bribery. You give donations to a particular campaign that you want to support with the full expectations that when the time comes around, you're going to get something back. And not just the pleasure of knowing you've got the right man in office, but that you're going to get your way when you want to pass laws or when you want legislation or when you want contracts for your work. This is all a different type of bribery. And nepotism, bringing in one's own, one's family members or one's own kind, whatever it is, you know. So Prabhupada says that when these three items are present, it's the root cause of irreligion, and that it is not possible to check these problems. He then says, not by the word Prabhupada uses here, statutory acts. Statutory acts simply means laws. You can't make laws that are going to control this because you can say don't turn on the red light, make a right turn. Actually, it's kind of confusing. New York, where I lived so many years, you can't turn on a right turn. You move down here, you can turn on a right turn, a red light. I'm sorry, make a right turn on a red light. So, you know, you've got laws there. Now, if you do the wrong thing, now, some people knowingly will do the wrong thing. How many people exactly follow the speed limit? No, nobody. No. Oh, I'm Rita Kaley. following the speed limit is one of those things that everybody does. They just go over the speed limit. Ah, anyway, I'm not going to follow it. You know, it's a law. So, but it doesn't work. It's a law. Pay your taxes. Everybody cheats on their taxes. Now you figure out a legal way to cheat, but everybody cheats on their taxes. So all these different things. By simply putting a law in effect, proposition, you can't control this stuff. By correcting one's nature, truthfulness, mercy, austerity, and there you go. By these four items, one can control these things. Not by the police presence, not by the enforcement of laws. Austerity, cleanliness, mercy, and truthfulness. So these are the ways by which we can actually see society benefit. Now, I saw something here at the end of this purport which really grabbed my attention. Actually, a couple of things here. Modern civilization and economic development are creating a new situation of poverty and scarcity with the result of blackmailing the consumer's commodities. Wow. Now, there is an analysis of the financial crisis in a nutshell. One sentence. You can understand the complete financial crisis that our country cries about being in. Modern civilization and economic development, the principle of so-called modern civilization and the principle of economic development are creating a situation of poverty and scarcity because the haves and the have-nots, based upon material desire. And as a result, it blackmails the consumer's commodities. We're looking at very shortly down the road, $5 a gallon for a gasoline, $5 for a gallon of gasoline, right? Does it really cost that? You hear how they speculate the pricing of gas by the barrel, you know, of crude oil and all that. It's completely speculative. Now, here's a great line, Prabhupada says. If the leaders and the rich men of society spend 50% of their accumulated wealth mercifully for the misled mass of people and educate them in God consciousness, certainly the age of Kali, which means intoxication, attachment to the opposite sex, and pride, will be defeated in the attempts to entrap the conditioned souls. So, conditioned souls. Okay, we can extract ourselves from being conditioned souls, right? But for those that aren't able to do so, at least if modern society, the rich men and the leaders, will spend 50% of their accumulated wealth. Now, right now, there's a big issue about the, what do they call it? Anyway, it's the tax break for the rich is basically what it is. And it was enacted a presidency ago by either the first or second administration of George Bush II. And so they're proposing now that, well, the rich shouldn't pay anymore. Now, the richest men, they're saying, no, 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 let us give more. We got so much. What do we need it for? And their associates looking at it like, what, have you lost your mind? Be quiet. This might actually happen. But Prabhupada's saying right here, you want to show you're very merciful and you're concerned about 50%. If you got $70 billion, okay, oh, now you got $35 billion. Gee, I don't know what I'm going to do. Such a cut in my salary. You got a guy like Bill Gates that regularly gives $1 million in charity for this, that, and the other. You know, so there's a man who has a philanthropic nature and gives generously to all kinds of different things. Like, so Prabhupada's saying that these are the people that should be giving their accumulated wealth. They have more. The tax system, according to the Bhagavatam, is that you make a profit that year, you give a percentage of it. You don't make a profit, you don't give anything. You don't pay a tax. And Prabhupada says it's not like you have your sales tax, you have your excise tax, you have your hotel tax, you have your gas tax, you have your car rental tax, you have your property tax, you have, you know, so on and so on and so on. There's one tax. That's it. 25% of whatever you make. Boom. There it is. That's how it's done. You don't make a profit that year? Okay, you don't pay a tax. Now, of course, it's based upon the principle of satyam, truthfulness. Yeah, I made a profit. Here you go. You know. Why? Because the people are confident that the government is going to be free of corruption, free of bribery, and free of nepotism. Therefore, they will support it. Because the government is doing what it should for the masses of people. We must always remember that false pride are too high an estimation of one's own values of life, undue attachment to women or the association with them, and the intoxication will divert human civilization from the path of peace. However much the people clamor for peace, Everybody wants peace. Peace in Darfur, peace in, what was it not too long ago, peace in Bosnia, peace in the Middle East, peace everywhere. Everybody wants peace in Afghanistan, peace in Iraq. But until these principles that are laid out in the Bhagavatam are enacted, there's no chance of peace. Because the material energy does not allow it. It victimizes the conditioned soul by their desires to accumulate more, by their desires for association unlimitedly with the opposite sex, by their desires to be proud of everything they have, and by the principle of intoxication. Either intoxication in the form of the pride, intoxication in the form of being proud of one's accumulations, or intoxication in the form of bad habits. So that is the way of correcting the flaws of human society, which are very prominently exhibited at the present moment. I mean, this purport, I think, is one of the most concise and exact explanations of the correlation between personal behavior and social conditions that you're ever going to find. Prabhupada, as I said earlier, Prabhupada lets them have it here. It's all right there. It's a complete analysis of the material circumstance in our modern times, and it gives a very clear solution to it as well. So this is the kind of purport from the Bhagavatam we should become completely excited about. We should be very, very satisfied that, you know, we have access to this information and feel greatly relieved that Prabhupada's given us this opportunity to get out of this particular condition. And this is just describing the beginning of Kali Yuga. I mean, we're 5,000 years in. I mean, who can imagine how much more degraded it's going to be 5,000 years down the road? So bad that's all that's left for Kali to come and just cut everybody's heads off. Okay, there is no hope for anybody. Sometimes the weeds get so bad in a pasture, I just burn the whole thing down and we'll start over from scratch. So that's where Kalki will be 5,000 years from now. But in the meantime, we have an opportunity to improve our own lives by these principles, and we have an obligation to share these principles with others so that they can improve their lives. So there we go. Thank you very much for your time. I appreciate the opportunity to speak about this particular verse. It's just so exciting to read things like this and understand what a genius Srila Prabhupada was. You know, just from a material point of view, what to speak of his spiritual position, just the practical social ramifications of this just show that Prabhupada was just way beyond anybody else. Hare Krishna, all glories to Srila Prabhupada. Question?
Thank you for the class, Prabhu. Just about Kali Yuga and saying it. Well, I've read and heard in several places, especially I think in the Brahma Vaivarta Purana, that there's supposed to be a small period of time within Kali Yuga called like the 10,000 years of Lord Chaitanya's golden age.
Golden age of Kali Yuga.
Where, you know, beginning with the advent of Lord Chaitanya until about 10,000 years after, things actually improve somewhat in that, you know, there's this the spreading of the Sankirtan movement. And so things improve in that sense. But then after that ends, then Kali Yuga really, really starts to get ugly. So I guess in like still within like the next 10,000 years, it's, I mean, sure, materially things will probably get worse, but probably not as bad as it'll get afterwards, right? I mean, I wish like I could find, I haven't searched that much for it, but I'd like to know more about like what specifically, more specifics about Lord Chaitanya's golden age period. Because I've read some things like, you know, it's going to get really bad soon before it gets better. You know what I mean?
Well, actually, you're living in that golden age. We tend to think of Lord Chaitanya and his associates, oh, this was 500 years ago. 500 years ago, such a long time. 400 years ago, Columbus discovered America. It's not that long ago. In the picture of universal time, we are practically associates of Mahaprabhu. Now, not to say that from a position of we're associates of Mahaprabhu, but from the point of view that we are a direct part of his influence on the age of Kali. And how is that? Through the mercy of Srila Prabhupada. by Srila Prabhupada's taking the message of Mahaprabhu, taking the message of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, and bringing that here to the most unlikely place and prospering with it. This is kicking off that period at which more than just village India will experience the message of Mahaprabhu. I had the good fortune, I may have told this story before, I probably have. I had the good fortune when I was living in New York of hosting Vishwambar Goswami, who's now passed away. He was the 17th generation descendant from Gopalbhatta Goswami's line and the head of the Radharaman Temple in Vrindavan. And he came to New York to visit. He was doing a tour of Europe and America speaking on the principles of Mahaprabhu. And he stayed in New York, and I had the good fortune of taking him around to Prabhupada's pilgrimage places, 26 Second Avenue, 94 Bowery, Tompkins Square Park. And we were standing outside of 94 Bowery looking at it. And I don't know how many of you have been to New York and have any picture of what the Bowery is like now, what to speak of what the Bowery was like in the 60s. He turned to me and he said, you know, many people in India appreciate what Srila Prabhupada has done. He said, but, famous but, until they come and see where he has done it, they can have no idea of his glories. So, such an amazing task. And this is what will push the beginning of that 10,000 years. Because what happened is now all the countries in the world are experiencing Lord Chaitanya's mercy in some form or another. You know? It's interesting because some of my, how shall I put it, you say, jaded God brothers, they're always kind of dying, there's nothing happening, there's no preaching going on, blah, blah. I don't know what they're looking at, but, you know, I read ISKCON news daily, and every week there's a new explanation of some great preaching program going on in some far remote country in the world. Kavi Chandramaraj just had 3 days of Rath Yatra in Bali. There's Rath Yatra in Sydney. There's amazing preaching going on right now with Indadunu Swami in Hong Kong. Siberia. Ekaterinburg, Siberia, is vibrant preaching going on there. Just wonderful collection of devotees. So like this all over the world, you know. I think the only places we don't have a temple are Arctica and Antarctica. Anybody that likes a cold climate, maybe you might want to go establish something there. I mean,